Hello and welcome to another edition of Editing Aloud. Sikonathi Mantshantsha, there's been a lot of discussion reasonably, I suppose, about land, and an American think tank institute has just recommended to the American government that they push us out, or threaten to push us out of AGOA, the agreement whereby we get sort of special access into the American markets. If the land debate ends, and Ray, you'll put me right if I'm describing this. If we threaten property rights in South Africa, I mean, it hasn't taken long for it to become an international problem.
It doesn't help that we are right next door to Zimbabwe, and at this very point they are dealing with Venezuela on the other side of the Atlantic. So this land issue will always come out until it is resolved. You need to kill the uncertainty about it. Yeah. The ANC must just go right ahead and do exactly what it is that they want to do, whether it is securing property rights or... But you can't have this uncertainty for long without causing this kind of damage, and a whole lot more is coming. It's just that matter of being undecided by the governing party.
Ray, you saw the note about it was the Cato Institute.
It's the Cato Institute. I mean, I think, you know, probably not to the left of the political spectrum.
No,
but it's more about the perceptions that exist overseas.
Yeah.
And you know, it's the first time I've seen an institute like that. They're ranked as one of the top think tanks, actually calling on Trump to kick us out of AGOA, which would be very bad for
us. Yeah, it would.
And it would begin that little mini trade war with the US, which we can't really afford.
Yeah, we wouldn't win.
So the perception that they have is that we're heading down the Zimbabwe-style road, even though there are some indications that we aren't, like this meeting that took place with between AgriSA and...
Well, I was going to raise that. I mean, so AgriSA, as I understand it, guys, had meetings with both Vice Deputy President Didi Mabuza and separately with Cyril Ramaphosa yesterday, I think, both emerging saying, you know, that nobody's panicking, there's no reason to panic, everything is under control, the ANC is committed to doing this thing properly, to ensuring that there are no land invasions, that nothing unfair is done, and that whatever is done passes constitutional muster, which it'll have to anyway. And I see the front cover today of the Financial Mail, or this week's Financial Mail, has the bank speaking out on land expropriation. Old Max Cyril wants your farm, EIEIO. And the story is saying the same thing, that nobody's panicking about it yet. The only people who are panicking are probably ordinary people in the market trying to buy or sell homes who are in trouble because of the lack of clarity, because nobody stands up and says, what exactly is going to happen? Lucanio, I mean, this is it's not a crisis, but it's a bad situation for people, and surely this is easy to resolve if you talk.
I mean, I think that's the point Sikonathi was making. I mean, I think the head of the land bank made the same point this week, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not against land reform, but if it's done terribly, because they basically lend money to farmers, and then they use they accept those land as collateral, which then they use to fund other people, I mean, to fund themselves. So can you imagine in a situation where you have a messy expropriation issue, which then triggers all sorts of defaults and things, and then you multiply that. I mean, I think the commercial banks have about 130 billion rands of loans that are covered by agricultural land. So these are sort of uncertainties that you can't really afford to have, and no matter what the reassurances we have every day, but in terms of every day times how we run markets and people worrying about where things are going.
And Ray, what would be stopping the government or the president from coming out and making it more clear? Is it that people just simply don't believe him, or the EFF does something and he responds to it and everybody thinks, oh, well, he's not really running the country?
You see, I think that there's an election coming up, and I think that, I'm guessing here, but I think that Ramaphosa probably doesn't want to put all his cards on the table now, because the EFF will then react and say, oh, so you are preserving the commercial, agricultural property rights.
Yeah.
We're the real revolutionaries, not you, and then they'll campaign on that going into the election. So probably wants this to happen later rather than sooner. But of course, that means uncertainty in the meantime.
And that is exactly why only AgriSA came out about that statement and said the ANC said.
Yeah.
The ANC itself did not come out and say, we met with these commercial farmers, our great farmers who feed us, and we will not expropriate their land. No. It's AgriSA that came out and said, the ANC has promised us. The ANC, no leader of the ANC will stand up and say, we will not expropriate commercial land.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Apparently the party asked for the meetings, not the other way around.
Whoever did, the ANC will not gloat about having asked for that meeting. Yeah. They will certainly not boast about having given assurance to formal agriculture that we will not expropriate land because of exactly what Ray has just said. Because they will be blamed to the EFF's feet.
Sure. I mean, I don't know whether there's an awareness in the EFF, and it may not really matter. But is there a general awareness in the NEC of the ANC? That there is a potential here to completely stuff up this economy and its banking system and its financial system if this goes wrong and it's badly handled. Luke.
No, on that note, Peter Duck, I know you've got a lot of interest in UK politics. I was going to ask you whether this reminds me of Britain in a way.
Yeah.
You know, like how they got to Brexit. It was a small party that did not even have a single, a single seat, which spooked the big party into calling a referendum that is unnecessary.
Yeah.
And then look where the country is now.
Yeah.
They could be falling out of the biggest trade.
Body. It's extraordinary.
They could be out of cancer drugs in a few months.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is what basically on a party that had one seat that managed to intimidate and fool the bigger
absolutely.
One. You know.
Yeah. But I mean, do you think that the ANC has the courage, or the NEC has an awareness of what's at stake?
Peter, I don't know. I mean, the caliber of people there, they are something else. But let it be said here and now. Nobody is interested in land reform. Not the ANC, not the EFF, not Julius Malema.
Yeah.
This is just politics
and
electioneering.
Yeah.
We are in this mad season, which of course has got a big human cost.
Yeah.
There are people whose loans, who will not get any funding in the banks because the banks don't know whether they should accept. And in the financial mail, we make it clear that, by the way, only a very few well-capitalized firms can run without bank support, and what bank is going to extend its loan book further into the agricultural sector to increase that 160 billion rand that they are already exposed to?
And there's some interesting bits in the piece which I might come to a little later, but I was interested in the list that was circulated the other day by AfriForum. They had about 195 farms on this list. I don't know whether you saw it was like a week ago or something.
I saw the article. I think you mentioned Adrian Basson's article about it as well.
That's right. Mm. And I just thought it was such a stupid thing to do if you're trying to defend the people's farms who were on the list, because they are now worth nothing, those farms. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were trying to sell one of those farms and it now appears on the list, AfriForum has screwed you big time by publishing this thing, whether it's bogus or not. And even more alarmingly, the Institute of Race Relations said it thought the list was authentic.
On a matter of where emotions are leading the debate, such as this one, there's bound to always be a huge room for disinformation.
Yeah.
Whether or not that list is authentic, can you really just tell me that someone in government will sit there and say, we want that farm and that farm and that farm and that farm, and will take it? And they will draw up a list and give it to AfriForum to publish?
Yeah. I'm not, of course,
disputing the
verdict. I think, as I understand it, this is a list of farms where attempts have been made at expropriation and have failed because there's been no willing buyer, willing seller agreement reached between the farmer and the government. So the government is saying that it's looking for some test cases in court, which will...
None of which might be on that list.
But this, it'll be from these farms. They'll take some of these farms, go to court and try and expropriate them in terms of the existing constitution to test whether or not the clause allows for it.
Yeah.
There's already
a case. At least some really weird reporting. I mean, Report ran a story this weekend, which I really also was upset about, I thought, as a journalist. The big headline was First Farm Seized. And it was just ridiculous, you know, because it wasn't talking about expropriation without compensation. It was talking about something completely different, of which there are 23 other examples since, I don't know, 2009. And the farm in question, or the farms, were game farms, right? So they don't grow anything there. They just allow people to come and shoot whatever wild animals they see. And the farmers, the owners wanted 200 million rand for them. And the government was offering 20 million rand, which was the same amount of money that some other commercial enterprises had offered them for the same land. So there was a general kind of agreement about what this place was actually worth. And to, you know, to go ahead and scream a headline like that, I just thought, yeah, you're just asking for trouble. Don't complain when it all goes wrong if you're contributing to it in that way. As journalists, I think we've got to be careful too, no?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a sort of atmosphere of panic, which is not good. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things to remember is that within the ANC, there are landowners.
Sure. And well, one of them is Cyril Ramaphosa.
And
big time.
Kwede Montash has a farm in the Eastern Cape.
Of exactly 12,000 hectares.
You know,
that's only not 11,999.
You know, they don't want their property prices to vaporize either. Yeah. You know, which, because the general effect, I think, of the hysteria is to make all land transactions slow down.
You can see it in the local, even in the domestic market, in housing in Joburg.
Yeah.
It's fallen off quite sharply. People are just waiting and seeing. Right, we'll be back after this break. Don't go away. Welcome back. Well, while the land debate goes sort of nowhere or rumbles around and people get nervous, two important, soon to be joined by others, commissions of inquiry underway. The Zondo Commission started this week and is due to last for up to 2 years, as the amount of time that Judge Ray Zondo is looking for. And of course, the inquiry into the South African Revenue Service, SARS, where today Business Day is reporting that that SARS has been inflating its compliance figures for personal income tax, for corporate and personal income tax. And none of this stuff is really surprising, because the performance in the last year or so of Tom Moyane's thing was a bit too good to be true, no?
And he claimed to have raised a trillion rand
based
on those figures.
Yeah.
Now, Peter, in the period Tom Moyane has been commissioner, he's helped to get rid of exactly 57 senior managers and executives at SARS, and did that internal restructuring. This again came out in the commission hearings yesterday.
Yeah.
Did that internal restructuring that got rid of the people who would tap you down and say, hey, you have not paid your... you have not submitted your tax return. It's not surprising that he's claiming these kinds of are these claims about SARS inflating. Now, the question is, if you can't trust the guy who collects the tax, we already know we can't trust the people who are entrusted with spending it.
Yes.
Who can you trust?
No, that's true.
Yeah.
The point about both these inquiries, I suppose, is that they're there to try and sort of win at least one of the fronts that Cyril Ramaphosa is fighting on. So he's fighting on a political front, but also on a kind of moral front. I mean, to an extent, he's not doing too badly on the scraping out, cleaning out the muck front. I mean, there've been some huge reports leaked in the last couple of days from the Treasury, from legal firms into all of the nonsense going on at Prasa and Transnet. It seems to me to be making some sort of progress there. I don't know whether it feels like that to you, but it certainly does to me. What worries me is whether politically, because I can't get a real sense of it, whether he's going to be okay. Because you keep hearing keep reading these stories, particularly in the Sunday papers, of fightbacks from people, you know, that Brian Molefe is fighting back, or Koko is fighting back, all these people are fighting back. Is that real, that fight back, do you think?
I think it is. I mean, there's too much at stake for them. I think that ultimately this is going to wash out into the criminal justice system under a head of national prosecutions who presumably will be much keener and more professional in going about these prosecutions. And so it becomes really serious for these people. They have to do everything they can to undermine, weaken, delay, slow down.
Of all of these beautiful characters, Sekonati, who's going to be first to look for to sort of hide behind turning state witness? Who do you think is the weakest character there?
You see, that only.
I've got my favourite.
That only happens when you have an arrest and there's a judge dangling a 20-year jail sentence.
Yeah.
I'd go for Anuj Singh.
Yeah, me too. He would be my guy.
Go for Anuj Singh. Yeah. Second, go for Brian Molefe.
Yeah.
When someone has lost everything or almost everything.
Yeah.
You want that person and you make an example of them.
Have you seen the ENS report, in the forensic report into the tender for the 1,025 locomotives?
Have you seen
1,064. Well, it specifically recommends that those two guys, in at least six instances, be arrested and charged with criminally for transgressions that they've done. And I can't help thinking that they must look at this, if they've got any sense, and think to themselves, oh my God, where do I go now?
At this point, Peter, they are probably sleeping very easily.
You think?
At this point. That only changes when there's a proper arrest and someone has to plead for bail and sleep two nights in a prison cell.
Yeah.
If you've got a billion rand...
It's already happened, and we forget, it's happened to two other important people. One is Jacob Zuma, okay? He hasn't, hasn't slept a night in a cell. And the other one is his son, Duda Zani. And it'll soon happen to Brian Molefe, and it'll soon happen to...
We are definitely going to see arrests, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And that is the only time I'll get excited.
Yeah.
Without impugning on the integrity of the Honorable Judge Ray Zondo and Rob Nugent, what they do in these commissions that we're talking about only will end up in recommendations.
Of course.
No action whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
And in fact, if you want to hide anything...
But we don't have to wait for them to finish it.
That's exactly my point.
Yeah.
If you want to hide anything as a politician,
appoint
a commission of inquiry to investigate it. That's a classic way of hiding it. So forget what they are doing, the honorable men they are. Wait for arrests. When Machela Gogo has been arrested and accused of something, when Brian Molefe has been arrested and accused of something, one of them is going to rat up on the others.
Of course.
And that's when we will see action.
Yeah. That'll be lovely. It'll be a beautiful thing to behold.
It's taking too long.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's not. We can't. It's taking so long because the police don't understand the complexity of the crime. And so what's coming out now is these reports, and if you read the ENS report, it basically describes in detail, here is his name, this is what he did, this is why you should arrest him, and this is what you should charge him with.
And then MNS attorneys add
MNS,
that...
MNS, MNS.
Yeah, then they add that Anuj Singh received these millions and these... Now, arrest just one of them.
Yeah.
One of them. Yeah. You've got the whole thing crumbling.
It's got to come soon. It'll crumble soon. Okay, Gwede Mantashe, last week he was telling us how big our farms need to be. This week he wants to withdraw from the MRPDF.
And they must be the size of his own farm.
Yeah. This week he wants to withdraw from the MRPDA. And why would... I don't understand why he would want to do that. He wants to withdraw the whole thing and start again, I presume, because it's all got too messy.
No, he wants to withdraw this amendment bill, which, as if they had passed it 2015 already.
Yeah.
And by the way, this goes all the way back to 2013.
Yeah.
They are trying to amend the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Bill.
Yeah.
They want to amend that. And they want the state to have a free carry, which means if you invest 20 billion rand searching for oil down in the Indian Ocean, the state already owns 20% of that, and you are forced to give another 20 or 30% to BEE and. He says, okay, wait, guys, we don't need to be dealing with the petroleum energy in this.
Yeah.
The Mineral Resources Act as it stands.
It's got its own free carries and its own...
Yeah, and it's sufficient. So he wants to withdraw the whole thing. This is after 5 years and after three energy ministers who have created uncertainty that has made it impossible for people to drill for oil or even for the Karoo matter. I know now I'm getting into the environmental snails, but for the Karoo matter to be done, where people need to search for gas.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there's this new minister, and before him there was Museveni Zwane. I can't even remember who was before Museveni Zwane.
Yeah.
They all, for the previous 5 years, Ramatlodi and Susan Shabangu, you can count until you run out of fingers.
Mm.
They've all been trying to sort out this mineral
resources. What's the problem with it? What's so difficult about it?
Because the state wants to grab 20%, that's the start.
Of oil, any new oil investment. And gas or minerals?
Oil and gas and minerals. Any new investment, any new mining venture.
Well, why doesn't it just say so and pass the bill and get on and see what the result is, which will, of course, be no investment, but we know that.
We know that, but you know that first act was drafted by our Honourable Museveni Zwane,
yes,
and included a clause that gives the Guptas quite a big say in the matter. So
that's because they were there was a change in which you could, if you'd become a naturalized South African after.
Yeah, all of it depends who's president of the ANC, who's the minister at that particular point, and that's the to and fro and the uncertainty that we've been talking about for years. So it's gonna.
Can I just ask something? There, do you know? Does anybody know? Is it common for? If you went to sort of drill for oil in the North Sea, Luke, where you've been quite close to for the last couple of years, and you found some oil, would you pay the state a royalty or some sort of free carry? Would they get a stake in what you do?
I mean, I wouldn't say to be an expert in this, but that was one of the big debates, for example, around the whole issue in Scottish independence, because that was how they were going to fund it. And one of the things was all the royalties from the drilling and the oil companies at the time.
Yeah.
And then obviously that sort of fell apart when the oil price fell apart.
Yes.
But I think there is to some extent, but there is definitely a levy.
Yeah.
But like whether it's anything as big as this kind of carry of 20% you're talking about, I don't actually know.
In South Africa, all the minerals, including whatever oil you might find, belong to the state. So you pay a royalty of 8%.
Eight, yeah.
It's
higher in Australia.
So they wanted in this law that Mantashe is pulling out of Parliament, in addition to that 8% royalty, they wanted an equity of 20% again in the hands of the state. And the difficulty there is that the state would not be paying for the 20%.
Yeah.
And they are again forcing the investors to give another 30% to black investors. Whether or not that would be funded is again a different story.
Is that in oil and gas or just in mining?
Mining and oil and gas. Mm. It's treated as one and the same. So you already have 58% of the whole thing out of the investor's hands, the actual person who brings the money and the skill into it. They've lost 58%. And that's why they've not been able to push it through Parliament.
But if they've got the numbers to push it through Parliament, is it a question of not having the argument to push it through? I mean, is anybody in the ANC who thinks
it's unconstitutional
ridiculous?
As a stat?
Yeah.
And secondly, it says, Museveni Zwane also inserted a clause that said, out of the revenues, you must pay your BE investor dividends before you pay any
out of the
other
revenues.
Yes, out of the revenues. I think he said 1% of revenue you pay as a dividend to the BE investor.
Yeah.
Now, you're separating the BE investor from the other investors.
Yeah.
If you're paying them 1% of revenue, what are you going to pay in taxes? And what are you going to pay to? How are you treating the other shareholders?
Yeah. Right. I mean, where does this? There's so much nonsense here.
By people who have no clue what they are doing.
No, but they didn't have any clue before either, and under apartheid, and the colonialists didn't have a clue really either. Everybody makes it up as they go along in their own interests. I mean, what does the arc of our story look like?
I think that the arc is that, you know, there was all of this process that took place was under the Zuma administration. And now you have a new administration which is saying, hang on, let's not do this. So I think it's quite positive, I would say. It shows that there is some sensitivity
investors. For instance, Ray, do you think, would he stop this border tax agency that the Home Affairs seems to want to create?
I wouldn't know, but there's clearly a view being taken here that we must be careful about affecting investment in this particular sector.
In this particular case,
Which should be a tick, I think.
Okay.
Because for years it's been bulldozed, pushed against a massive outcry from everybody in the industry.
Yeah. Listen, just one other story that I noticed on the front page of Business Day today was ShopRite reporting its first loss in 25 years or ever. Since 1998. Okay, there we go. It's a long time. So after acquiring OK Bazaars for the princely sum of R1 from breweries, why would Whitey not be able to make a buck in today's market? What would have stopped it?
In fairness, they've had a good run for 20 years. Yeah. And we've been speaking about these issues. This is actually not, the interesting thing here is not just so much about ShopRite. It's what it says about the whole economy.
Let's correct this. It's not a loss. It's the first drop in
earnings. That's correct. And I think for me, the interesting story is really what is telling us about the macroeconomic picture.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually looking gloom. I think from ShopRite to Mess, then to even Woolworths. The Woolworths has got more to do with Australian stuff. But when you look about it, it's all it's telling you is that the South African consumer, South African household is under immense pressure from all these issues. And it's also filtering through. I don't necessarily know, think it's a case of bad management. It's hard to say after 1 year. And if you look at also like the whole issue with Angola,
The Angolan currency, do they have a big operation in Angola?
I think they said they had a great run in Angola as well, over 2 years, 60% growth in earnings. And now, in terms of the rest of Africa operations, it was just 85% down.
Angola now, see, Sikonati has called in the IMF for help in promising that they'll behave and do whatever reforms the IMF wants them to do.
We are following suit in Angola's steps. But the thing about Angola was the devaluation of the kwanza against the US dollar, following, of course, that big long slump in terms of oil prices, which Angola relies heavily on. But the ShopRite story is really a very South African story. 67% of their revenue comes out of this country.
Yeah.
And this is a country where we have increased VAT by 7%, which they can't pass on to consumers.
Yeah.
13,400 items they could not increase prices on.
Wow.
You have energy prices, Eskom and fuel going through the roof. In addition to that, you've got a starving consumer. They have had a 35% increase in break-ins and robberies at the store, at the stores.
Yeah,
that's the South
that's
African
story.
That's
a whole new way of shopping. Thank you very much for listening to us, and we'll see you again next week.